Genesis chapter 19 is where we find ourselves this morning. I think this couldn't have come at a better time in looking at the life of a man by the name of Lot. Now, we saw a little bit of him. He's Abraham's nephew. The whole chapter is essentially about the answer to prayer that Abraham lifted up on behalf of Sodom and Gomorrah. Prayer that was successful or not successful, you be the judge. He prayed that God wouldn't destroy the city if there were 10 righteous in it. He started with 50 and you saw him work his way down to 10. And the Lord said, I will not destroy the city if I can find 10 righteous people in the city. Sadly, and the angels came down, they discovered it was worse than that. And they had the need to speak with Lot and to rescue Lot and literally drag him out of the city before it is destroyed. But there are many lessons here that we can learn from Lot. Lot is a case in point of a person who had an encounter with God, had an experience being in a family that knew about God and influenced him for God, but his heart was drawn to the world. And in that drawing to the world, he eventually, though he started out being as prosperous and as blessed as Abraham while he was with Abraham, you see him slowly degrading to eventually, sadly, as you'll see, he loses everything. It's a good example for us. We can learn from his example as we see him assimilated in Sodom and then essentially assaulted in Sodom and then having to be rescued from Sodom, flee from Sodom. But because of his life, he had no influence on others. And it's a sad story. And I hope that we can learn from his bad example to not make those same mistakes, because Jesus pointed out when he was teaching that as it was in the days of Lot, so it would be in the coming of the Son of Man. And speaking about that judgment that came suddenly, yet God rescued Lot. Despite that Lot was not that on fire for God, the Lord still had mercy on him, but it was because of the prayer of Abraham. We can make some applications for our lives. Let's take a look at this message that the Lord has for us. In verse 1, it says, now the two angels, those were the two angels that came to visit Abraham, along with the third person who we recognized as, of course, Jesus. Lot at this point is now seeing these two angels come to Sodom in the evening, the very same evening that Abraham is still up there in Canaan, interceding, praying for Sodom, interceding that night with the Lord. It says Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. Typical greeting of respect. He said, here now, my lords, please turn into your servant's house and spend the night. Wash your feet that you may rise early and go on your way. And they said, no, but we will spend the night in the open square. But he insisted strongly. So they turned into him and entered his house. And then he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread and they ate. Interesting about Lot, his first encounter with the big city was in Egypt as a young man, the nephew of Abraham. Abraham got a little afraid of the famine, went down to Egypt, always a bad move. And that, I believe, may have influenced Lot just enough to give him a little taste for the fast life. And so when it came time for them to part company, remember, Abraham gave to Lot the first choice. See, when you're walking in faith, you never have to worry about yourself. You never have to fight for yourself, fight for your rights, demand your rights. You can be gracious and, you know what, be generous, helpful to others, because you don't have to worry about yourself. The Lord will take care of you. So Lot chooses what? The easy life. The well-watered plains of Sodom and Gomorrah. The Bible tells us in Genesis 13 that he looked toward Sodom. That it's not just looked casually, but longingly. Wow, that's pretty cool over there. Man, just I can envision an easier life, you know, beautiful green, the lushness of it. The life is a lot easier. Living in the city, who wants to live in tents like Abraham was doing? So he looked for it. Then in chapter 13, you see him pitching his tent towards Sodom. He's still living in the plains, but he pitches his tent towards Sodom. So every time he'd open the flap of his door, there was the city. Oh, that's kind of nice, you know. And what you put in front of your face, you understand, it's going to affect you. What you put in front of your heart, where your treasure is, your heart will follow. What you value, what you think is important, is what you're going to do. So he pitches his tent towards Sodom. Well, the next time you find him in Genesis 14, he's living in Sodom. Now you find him in Genesis 19 here. He's sitting in the gate. kind of a strange way of putting it, sitting in the gate. Sitting at the gate, near the gate, by the gate? No, in the gate. Well, we don't think of a gate like that. We think of a gate as just something you open and go through. But in those days, the gate of the city was a room that was essentially the judgment hall. You come to visit a city, you had to go through some scrutiny. Where are your papers? Where are you from? You know, you want to make sure you're not a spy. What commerce? What's your business here? Who do you have an appointment with? It's like going through customs in a way, going through immigration. It was the gate. And Lot has now become a judge in the gate. He's there, totally assimilated in Sodom. And of course, that is a problem because that's not what God had in mind for this righteous man. But he had that draw toward Sodom. Now, the Bible tells us that blessed is the man who delights in the word of the Lord. Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stand in the path of sinners, nor sit in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord. What happened to Lot? Now, does this mean that Christians, we shouldn't be in positions in the world? No, not at all. We're in the world, but not of the world. The problem with Lot is that he didn't go in as a witness to the true and living God. He went in out of greed, out of personal motivations, out of his own desires. And you can be in the world because you're drawn, lured into those things, or you can be in the world as a witness, as an ambassador for the love of God, that, hey, there's a God in heaven who has a much better plan that he's got designed for your life than what you're doing there, fella. There's a love and a compassion. Well, he didn't go there for that. And of course, it wasn't long before this becomes a conflict. The Bible tells us in 2 Peter that righteous Lot was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. It bothered him, but he still loved all the things he could have there. But it bothered him, and it tormented his soul seeing their wickedness. Yet, at the same time, he was assimilated. Now, in verse 4, it says, now before they lay down, you know, inviting, by the way, these angels into his house was an act of hospitality that would have been expected. But normally for a judge, he would only reserve himself for very important people. And somehow or another, these two stand out. And Lot jumps right on him. He doesn't even want them to stay in the open square, and you'll understand why later. But before they lay down, the men of the city, it says, verse 4, the men of Sodom, both old and young, all the people from every quarter surrounded the house. See, as these two angelic visitors came, they were very attractive, I'm sure. They were standouts. They got the attention of the whole neighborhood, and the word spread. You know, Lot has these amazingly attractive guys there. Well, the word spread to the baser sorts there in Sodom, and it says, really, the men of the city, all old and young, people from every quarter, surrounded the house, and they called to Lot, and they said to him, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may know them carnally. So Lot went out to them through the doorway and shut the door behind him and says, oh, please, my brethren, do not do so wickedly. You know, the men of Sodom are aggressive at this point. And here's the problem. When you compromise with the world in one area, what happens is eventually where you're assimilated, it will become an assault. You see, I think it's interesting when you have to make your break from the world, the more you get assimilated into it, the more painful it becomes. And here they come on to him very strong. And we want to know these men, and he's now trying to defend. And the nature of sin is like this. You see, when you tolerate that sin in your life personally and even nationally, it doesn't stop right there. Toleration becomes approval, and approval becomes desire. And eventually, this has become all perfectly accepted. This is normal living for them. They have found another way to pleasure themselves. And by the way, there is no end to discovering ways to pleasure oneself in this world. The world of sinful pleasures are at the fingertips of just about everybody with the internet. Your imaginations can't even fathom things that people have discovered. Now, we see this evidently in our country, and it's particularly, and I'm going to speak very honestly and plainly and forthrightly about the homosexual movement. Because it is a movement that at first wanted to have acceptance, but it's more than that now. They are very aggressive, and essentially, you have now been labeled, you people who believe the Bible, you have been labeled as extreme and dangerous to society because you do not accept and go along with these things that based upon all the latest research is normal. By the way, a note on research. You know, there are a number of books out on Alfred Kinsey, who is the foundation of pretty much all the research on human sexuality. In fact, even in our schools and universities, everyone appeals to Alfred Kinsey with his research on human sexuality. Human sexuality, the male and the female, and all of those things. The problem is, his research has really been debunked, largely, because he essentially had a bias in his own life to remove all restraint from any type of sexual practice that you could imagine. And when he interviewed what he made you think was interviewing average Joe and Susie Homemaker, he was actually interviewing prisoners and prostitutes and people that are in the homosexual community. And so essentially that's where the figure 10% came from, that 10% of all people are homosexual, which is a pure lie. It is so far off. It's more like 2 to 3%. Then even if you take those 2 to 3% of all of the people in the homosexual community who want to even get married, because marriage is not top on their list, they want to have a free swinging life. You know, they don't want to have that. They want to find other ways to pleasure themselves. They don't want to be confined to marriage. Only 5% of that 3% wants to get married. So that means only 0.25% of the people in this country care about getting married that are homosexual in a same-sex union. You'd be amazed. Here, this doesn't even show up as a blip on the radar, and yet it is in our face constantly. It's before our Supreme Courts, both in the states and in the federal government. It's in the hate crimes laws to try to bring special privileges to them, to try to silence anybody who speaks against homosexuality. If they had their way, I'd go to jail for this message. This is where it's moving toward. There's a pastor in Canada that's in jail for speaking a message like this. In Sweden, in various other parts, we want to model Europe. We want the world to like us. So as Americans, you know, and this is the mentality of some, that that's the most important thing in the world, to let the world like us. And here's where we are. Now, listen, folks, the statistics on this are staggering. You know, look what's happened to the Boy Scouts, how they've taken such heat for their stance on that straight life. Books that are slipped into our libraries and schools that talk about, you know, these normal relationships between same-sex couples. They're not normal, folks. Not that they're not people for whom Christ died. We love them. We don't hate them. But we want to tell them the truth in love and help them be rescued from that. There is so much about this. The government wants to spend $10 billion on daycare, but doesn't want to invest $150 million on crisis counseling for couples in trouble, which would solve a lot of these other problems. You know, there is such a dismantling of the family. From 1957 on, you can actually see, subtly people may think that is because of the baby boom. They wanted to do something to influence less children. So that's when more and more abortions started to happen. And then that became a legal issue in 73. It began kind of a process of the pressure on families. If you had more than two children, you know, in the 50s and 60s, you were almost ridiculed. And the pressure to have less children. The subtle attack, the laws, the marriage penalties in the laws that were written in. You can actually trace a lot of these statistics down amazingly in Hollywood, of course. Till the day right now we have, for every 100 children that are conceived in the womb, listen, 1/3 of them die of abortion. Another 1/3 of them are born out of wedlock. And the other 1/3 are born into a family with a mother and a father. This is the statistic. And you know what? Kids of divorce do worse than single parents. Families that produce the most delinquents come from families that are broken and they don't have a mother and a father in a home. I mean, this is just statistics. The government understood this originally, is why they gave such benefits to marriage, but now we're moving in a different direction. Why? Because a very small but powerful minority does not want any stop to their desires. And Kinsey was basically, the stats that he produced are all of these things based upon it. But he did not, I mean, you can read, you know, books about him that basically exposed how he was involved in all kinds of perversions and wanted no restraint whatsoever, hated any kind of moral code. Really didn't feel there was any problem with sex between animals and children and everything else. It's bizarre when you look at him. And it's amazing how this never came out. Even though it's very plain, all of these things have been shown. I understand there are videos locked up in Indiana State University that have a lot more information about him, but they're under lock and key. If people even knew the truth about him as a person, they wouldn't believe any of his stats. But see, why is it that this stuff is kept suppressed? Because there is a thrust in our nation. We should not be surprised as Christians. I mean, we live in this. The world tends towards Sodom. We saw the judgment that led up to the flood, and now the judgment that led up to the Tower of Babel, then the judgment that led up to Sodom and Gomorrah. We tend toward rebellion because that's what's in our code because of sin. And here we have now Lot in the middle of this. Now some will say, well, churches, you know, they have a right to say their piece, but, you know, not in the public square. In fact, more and more, you're seeing pressure upon Christians. There are Christians right now that were fined in Arizona because they have a photography business and they didn't want to do a lesbian ceremony and it was their prerogative. They got sued and lost. You know, more and more we're seeing this kind of pressure being borne upon us. You've been silenced. You know that. You know, you can't speak your mind freely about these things in the workplace. They'll fire you faster than you can sneeze. And I think at one point or another, we have to decide what's more important, to speak the truth in love or to worry about ourselves. And I think Lot answered that question for his life a while ago. He wanted this nice life and he kind of put up with it. He tolerated all the stuff around him. But now it's in his face. Now it's in his face and he's got a painful choice to make. What does he do? They're pressing him for these men, these visitors. And in that culture, to not show hospitality, to turn over your guests that you come into your home, it's like turning over your family. You can't do that. So it says in verse 8, we see something about Lot that makes us a little disgusted. He says, "See, now I have two daughters who have not known a man. Please let me bring them out to you, and you may do to them as you wish. Only do nothing to these men, since this is the reason they have come into the shadow of my roof." How could this man offer his two daughters is beyond my imagination. I can't even fathom this kind of mentality. But this shows you how far degraded Lot became. Living in Sodom, assimilated in Sodom, he's lost all reason. Well, they said, "Stand back." And they said, "This one came in to stay here and he keeps acting as a judge. Now we will deal worse with you than with them." So they pressed hard against the man. Lot, they were going to come and rape him. They came near to break down the door, but the men reached out their hands and pulled Lot into the house with them and shut the door. And then they struck the men who were at the doorway of the house with blindness, both small and great, and they became weary of trying to find the door. You want to know how powerful passions are? They go against all reason. Does this make sense to you at all? I mean, they're struck with blindness and they're still trying to find the door. They're still enraged with their passion and their anger because someone would stop them. I think that you have to understand the nature of arousing passions in your own heart. Very, very powerful. When you stimulate the pleasure centers of your brain, you throw reason out the window at times. You know what it is? When you talk about young people, we talk about them getting in trouble, right? You know, like they found themselves in a place where they're alone, they had opportunity, and one thing leads to another, and then what happens? They get to the point of no return. That's just human nature. You've got to be wise to protect yourself from that. You don't want to be putting yourself in those positions. Wise parents will have a lot to say about the time that their children can be alone with members of the opposite sex. And you should as a parent. And don't listen to your children say, "Oh, you're so old-fashioned." No, you're just wise. As long as they're living in your home, you'd better protect them. Because what happens is they get those passions aroused. They can't make an intelligent decision. What you know for yourself. We counsel men sometimes struggling with pornography. And I'll tell you, all reason goes out the door once they start stimulating themselves with those passions. They can't even think straight. Even in the homosexual community, when AIDS came out, you would think that that would have pretty much stopped all homosexual activity. It didn't. Even though what they call safe sex is not safe, they took huge risks with their lives because once those passions are aroused, passion knows no reason. And I think this is an indicative of this society that's sold after passion. And we are there, folks. We're there. We export more filth throughout the world than any other nation. People talk about it being a victimless crime. Couldn't be more from the truth. It is not victimless. You know, I think of those young girls and young boys that get caught up into that world. abused and used for the pleasures of others. Well, here we have Lot. The men said to Lot, "Have you anyone else here, son-in-law, your sons, your daughters, whomever you have in the city, take them out of this place, for we will destroy this place, because the outcry against them has grown great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it." You ever think about what outcry came against them? You couldn't go through Sodom without being raped, I guess. You know, I mean, it got a bad report. Stay away. A society totally given over to itself, changing the laws to accommodate all kinds of freedom for whatever pleasure you can imagine. And they say, "We're going to destroy this place. The Lord has sent us to destroy it." Well, Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-laws, and this is one of the most sad, tragic pictures of Lot. These sons-in-laws, who had married his daughters, and said, "Get up out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city." But to his sons-in-law, he seemed to be joking. You know, what is it about Lot that he had no influence at all? Because he was assimilated. See, you'll have no influence to anybody as an ambassador for Jesus Christ if you're doing the same things that you're telling them, hey, you got to escape from. What influence do you have? There's a perceptible loss of power in your life when you compromise to the world. You lose that power, that joy, the joy of your salvation, the life in the Lord. "He who continues in my word, he'll know the truth, and the truth will set him free," Jesus said. But when you don't continue in his word, abide in it, and believe in it, and obey it, you know what? You're not going to experience that power. "In my word," Jesus said, "my words are spirit and they are life." There's power in the word of God. It will give you focus and understanding so you can see through the illusions and the lies, the temptations to see them as they are. It's a very simple thing, actually. Something that an old wise man told me and actually wrote in my Bible as a young believer. Sin will keep you from this book, or this book will keep you from sin. The Bible will keep you from sin, you continue in it, but sin will keep you from the Bible. If you find yourself getting cold toward the Bible and not desiring to read it, not desiring to seek the words of God, you are being caught up and assimilated into the culture that eventually you're going to be in Lot's position, where it's going to be a painful choice now. And now he has this difficult thing and no one wants to listen to him. Who is he? So when the morning dawned, he's arguing all night with his family. Can you imagine? The morning dawned, the angels urged Lot to hurry, saying, "Arise, take your wife, your two daughters who are here, lest you be consumed in the punishment of the city." And while he lingered, I mean, he can't take your daughters then. Presumably the two daughters that weren't married. I mean, I only presume, we don't know. Take your wife. "And while he lingered, the men took hold of his hand, his wife's hand, and the hands of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful to him, and brought him out and set him outside the city. And so it came to pass when they had brought them outside that he said, 'Escape for your life. Do not look behind you, nor stay anywhere in the plain. Escape to the mountains, lest you be destroyed.'" You know, Lot finds himself now in a very painful decision, uprooting his family, getting out of Sodom, but he's lingering. It almost cost him his life. Wasn't quite sure what he wanted. I mean, he's still like, "Oh, you know, this is everything I know. It's all I know." You know, I think in some ways the call of becoming a disciple of Jesus is kind of like that in a way. It's a fearful thing. It's a fearful thought. I mean, I was there. In fact, one of my biggest struggles, I can't imagine being a Christian, because it just seems to be too hard. Everything I know is over here, and you want me to go over there. And I just didn't know. And of course, because of this, you see Lot trying to make a compromise here. And there's a lot we can learn from Lot's words here in this compromise. Lot said to them, "Please know, my lords, indeed now your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have increased your mercy in which you have shown me by saving my life. But I cannot escape to the mountains, lest some evil overtake me and I die. See now, this city is near enough to flee to, and it's a little one. Please let me escape there. Is it not a little one? My soul shall live." And he said to him, "See, I favored you concerning this thing also, and that I will not overthrow this city for which you have spoken." In other words, God says, "Okay, fine. Go to that city, fine. Hurry, escape there, for I cannot do anything until you arrive there." Therefore, the name of the city was called Zoar, and the sun had risen upon the earth when Lot entered Zoar. So Lot makes this interesting compromise. He argues with the angel who says, "Run to the mountains." Listen, there's an interesting thing that we can get from his line of reasoning that we can learn for our own lives. Because frankly, in many ways, we do the same thing. We actually reason in the same way with God in the struggle that we have, like Lot. The first argument is, since you've already shown me favor by saving my life, he's essentially saying that if you've been good enough to save me, then certainly you'll be good enough to allow me to continue in a little sin. That's kind of a reasoning that people have at times with their walk with God. They say, well, God loved me enough to save me, so he doesn't care too much about all these other little things that I'm struggling with. The second line of reasoning is a line of reasoning that kept me from coming to the Lord, I think, a long time. He says, I'm not strong enough to make it to the mountains. I'll be overtaken. I'll die. I can't do it. It's too hard. And I think that I looked at Christianity like that. It's too hard, too hard. I can never be that good. Well, if God is strong enough to save me, isn't he strong enough to give me the power to live like he's asked me to live? The final argument is probably one of the most profound. It's just a little city. We would argue like, well, you know, it's not a big sin. It's a little sin. The problem is with little sins, they lead to big sins. When you let something go in your life and you tolerate it, it eventually will take over. You know, I'm amazed how absorbed we are in the culture and we just don't even blink anymore. On my opening webpage, you know, I have like the top news items, the top, you know, this or that, and just kind of get a cross section of, you know, what's most important in the world. And, you know, I've got top movies and top songs. And I noticed I was watching one of the number one songs this last summer and through the fall. The top one right now is Touch My Body by Mariah Carey. And it's all about sex. And of course, the number one song, and this is the most tragic thing, all the whole summer it was number one, was I Kissed a Girl by Katy Perry. And the sad thing about her story is that she wasn't always Katy Perry. She was Kate Hudson. And she was involved. In fact, her first album was a Christian album. She was in that direction. And I don't know, maybe there wasn't any money in that direction or, you know, popularity. And everybody, it seems, takes a page out of Madonna's playbook when it comes to gaining popularity and money and riches. And that is essentially just keep getting more and more provocative. Shock them, shock them, shock them, shock them. And eventually, you know, you'll have this huge following. Everybody wants to, you know you. I'm amazed at this mentality. It's like a freak show in a way. You know, people are always interested in seeing some new freaky thing that they've never seen before. And now let's shock them. And, you know, you have a lot of young girls, you know, now experimenting with bisexuality because of these types of things. But this is the mentality. And it's sad because they don't know down the road what those little things will mean eventually in a lifestyle that they choose. Well, here is Lot. The Lord allows him to go to Zoar. And there's a great lesson there, by the way. You see, you can't make people leave Sodom in a way. Though they mercifully pull him out, they can't make him go. They appeal to him to go. He compromises, and God even allows him that choice. This is one of the most amazing features about God and the relationship with God that you must understand. We must know this about the Lord. He's not going to twist your arm. He's not going to force you to follow him. He won't do it. You know, in fact, that's kind of the scare. I wish sometimes he would. You know, just keep me from that. If I pray and I ask him, he will. But if I'm hell-bent on going in my direction, he's not going to stop me. The rich young ruler that came to Jesus and said, what must I do to inherit eternal life? Jesus told him, the law, because the law was meant to reveal sin so that you'd know you'd need a Savior. Have you broken God's law? Have you dishonored his name? Have you lied? Have you lusted? Committed adultery by doing so? Have you hated committing murder in your heart? I mean, if you've broken God's law, then you are under judgment so that you know you need a Savior. And that's what Jesus was doing with this rich young ruler. But in his mind, he thought he kept all the law. So the Lord saw what was really getting him, and he'd made money his God. So Jesus simply pointed out, well, why don't you sell all that you have, give it to the poor, and come and follow me, and you'll have treasures forever. Most people here, sell all? Oh, wow. Oh. But what they don't hear is, come and follow me. Jesus gave this man an opportunity to be one of the privileged disciples and have riches forever. He was holding on to manure of this world in deference to that rather than take the riches that will last forever. But you know what? He's caught up in the world. He can't see, just like Lot couldn't see. Lot couldn't make a decision wisely. But you see, this is the thing. Even though God rescues him, he still allows him to go to Zoar. And I think there's a very, very important point here. God will not force you. You know, it's interesting. He let the Jews build the golden calf even after he rescued them from Egypt. And of course, they suffer for that. He allowed David to have multiple wives, which eventually got him into trouble. Then he wasn't even enough with that. He wanted Bathsheba and he sinned and committed murder. You know, a lot of men I've heard say justify their own sin. Well, God loved David and David got away with it. Oh, what a dumb thing to say. Look what it cost David. The whole point is the Lord doesn't want to force you. He wants you to learn from someone else's mistake. You see, the fool has to learn the hard way. That's an expensive way to learn, by the way, instead of learning from somebody else's mistake. But don't read God's approval because he allows Lot to go to Zoar. That wasn't God's first choice. Don't read God approving Solomon to have 1,000 women in his life because he let him. He wasn't approving of it. There's Christians that do a lot of things and they think it's okay because God isn't throwing a lightning bolt at them or, you know, making them suffer for it. You know, he's giving them space. You know, and the other thing is there are those that imagine that what we want as Christians is to take over this world, to change all the laws and make this a Christian nation. You know, that couldn't be farther from the truth. We as Christians need to be separate from the state in that sense, because our power is not from control, but it's from influence. We're called to be ambassadors. We're called to be influential lights in the world, not forcing morality down people's throats. Rather, just showing them, hey, it works better when you trust the Lord. Look what the Lord can do in your life, and you influence them. You know, you can either choose power or influence. And I'll tell you, you know what? Those who choose power, what have the 535 men and women who control the 300 million people in this country have done for us? Beside, screw this country completely up. And that's what power does. Power corrupts and power gets to people's heads and they only think about getting more power. Once you get power, you got to keep your power. That's your own goal. Just keep that power, whatever it takes. And this is where our nation has gone. But you know what? You can have much more effect on a nation being a janitor for some company than you can if you were a politician in Washington. Let me tell you why. Because of influence. You can be an example and influence others, and you never know who you'll influence and how God will use your life. You know, it's amazing how we need to take a stand. Evo Elder, who the boxer that we've had come and share, and he was on Contender for a while, and he was on our cruise, and he was sharing. He came with his wife, Amy, and he was telling me an interesting story that when he left visiting us, he went to the airport. You know, there was this long line, and it looked bad. It was an hour wait, didn't know he was going to make his flight. And he overheard the lady behind him say she's going to Atlanta, but the flight was canceled. And he turned around because he was going there, and he sees this beautiful 30-something lady that's dressed unbelievable, you know, Versace clothes and Prada shoes. I mean, she stands out like a sore thumb. And so after she hangs up, he says, I overheard you're going to Atlanta. Is the flight canceled? She goes, yeah, it's canceled, but Lord willing, we'll make it. And he goes, oh, Lord willing, are you a Christian? And she goes, yeah, I'm a Christian. And so he began talking to her. And as it turns out, she was visiting her boyfriend and who plays in the NFL. And, you know, pieces, the puzzle started fitting together. You know, it's why she's dressed that way and looks that way. And so he began to talk to her, and he's very bold. He just says, are you keeping your relationship biblical? She goes, well, we're doing the best we can. And he goes, I'm not going to accept that. That there's no way you're going to pull the wool over my eyes, you know. And he began to talk to her about, you know, what it means to be a follower of the Lord and to honor him. And, you know, in 20 minutes, she was bawling her eyes out, crying and praying to receive the Lord. Calls her boyfriend right on the spot and says, we're done unless you want to serve God. And he gets her plugged into a church where her hometown is, and she's there serving the Lord. She says her life was changed that day. You know, you can make a difference in people's lives. And you never know, they're all around you. Why are we afraid? If the Lord has touched you and he's influenced you, this is what you have is influence. You don't have force. You're not going to chase them down the street and hit them over the head with a Bible. You're not going to force them to follow. You know, you're not going to handcuff them to bring them to church. You know, we're not going to lock the doors on you right now. You're free to leave anytime. Point is that we hope that by example, not just by rhetoric, not by this compulsion and organized religion and force you. No. You see, it wouldn't work that way. We want to influence. But you know, we also have to recognize there are subtle lies that are being told about the foundation of this nation. I mean, right now, you can't go to Washington, D.C. without seeing the monuments that just breathe spirituality that was rich in our country at one point. But now, the new Capitol Center that they want to open up in Washington, D.C., it's going to cost them about $600 million. It's underground. It's a visitor center. And essentially, David Barton, who is one of the most amazing researchers in our founding fathers' documents about our nation, and he shows how the textbooks have been carefully edited, remove references from God and religion, and speeches of Washington have been sanitized, you know, from religion. And in the visitor center, he says every single reference to God has practically been expunged. Everything, they've even just changed, like they've got a picture of the room in which the house you have In God We Trust over the speaker's area. You never see it, by the way, the TV. You ever notice that? They cut that out just right at the top. The TV camera just keeps it below that. So if you're watching C-SPAN, you never see it. And it is amazing to me. This visitor center is basically expunged every reference. And they've even got a lot of historical inaccuracies about the Bill of Rights and constitutional separation of powers and many other topics. And he got a copy of the document, had to sue to get it. And he's trying to expose this so that people know we're being lied to. This is what's happening. You know, and I believe the economic earthquake, I believe it's just a result of us leaving our foundation. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. But sin is a reproach to any people. We have been a nation that has tolerated sin to a degree where it's hurting us. If we encourage the family, that will make a huge difference. But when you give marriage penalty laws, that discourages people from doing the right thing. I know there are people in this church that would get married the way they should get married if it weren't for this economic pressure because of the way the laws are written. And I think you need to re-examine that position. I think you need to make that choice to follow the Lord and honor Him, and He will honor you. And this is true in all of our lives. But you have the choice. You have the choice, and here is Lot. Sadly, because he had so little influence, notice what happens. Verse 26, but his wife looked back behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. This judgment that came, fire and brimstone, was it some volcanic thing that just totally erupted and it's raining all this molten lava and the rock and the spewed salts and all that stuff? Because now when you go down in that area, I mean, it's the Dead Sea. It is just barren. It's dead. It's way below sea level, which could have been as a result of that huge destruction. And now all the water that runs into it, just it's dead. It's just nothing lives there. And here his wife looked back behind him and she became a pillar of salt. Now I know we try to think of the movie, you know, and she turns around and he turns into this pillar of salt. I'm sure the graphics could really do a good job with that now. I think the point is that it's not just that she looked back. More than that. You know, just like when Lot first looked towards Sodom, there was a longing that motivated him to move in that direction. And I believe that this was the longing. She said, this is crazy. Going up the mountains, we're leaving our home. You don't know what you're talking about. Look, everything's fine. There's no judgment. And I believe that she broke off with him and she started back and she got caught up in the destruction. Lot couldn't even influence his wife. And now all he has is his daughters. If you say your sin doesn't hurt anybody, I want you to think again. Truth is, no one sins alone. You influence others around you. If you indulge yourself, fathers, in selfish living, that influences your children. And the effect will be seen in that third and fourth generation. Sins of the fathers visited the third and fourth generation. See, that is actually merciful, because if it weren't for the sake of God's mercy and break it, it would continue even worse and worse and worse. But the Lord is merciful. The sins of youth hurt parents. The sins of parents hurt the youth. The sins of employers hurt employees. I mean, everyone's sin, you think, oh, I'm not hurting anybody. Oh, even if you're not directly harming someone, by the fact that you have no power now to be influential, this is Lot. He has no influence on anyone. He can't even save his own family. Let me encourage you. Put the Lord first. You know, in this time of uncertainty right now, there's a lot of fearing people who are with whited knuckles holding on to their stuff because they're afraid. They're going to start storing up cash around the house, storing up, being very careful for themselves, thinking of themselves. Let me tell you something. A brother I shared with this last week, he actually shared a ministry the Lord encouraged him to start. And I was asking him about it. He basically, you know, he says, you know what, there came a point where I had enough and I just wanted to make a difference in the world. And so I started doing some investing and this and that. And what I did was I started this little group, my little ministry, all this money pool to invest in this particular thing. Whatever comes out of that goes to support missions. So we began starting little businesses and starting little things, and everything that came out of it, 100% of the profits, they're supporting missionaries and missions and groups. And I thought, what an amazing thing, because I'm praying that while around the country, because of the economic situation going on, at least what I've talked from a lot of pastors, we're all basically in the same boat. You know, the resources are down about 20%. So we have to make tough choices. I mean, we have to be wise with what the Lord gives to us. So we'll have to reduce different things here and there and perhaps let some go. And, you know, I mean, again, across the board, we have to obviously be wise. You can't spend what you don't have. Can't continue to press out in a ministry if it's not there. But I'm praying that God would help us not lose sight of what's eternal and make that difference. You know, in this uncertain time, if anything, we should be more focused on the things that are of the kingdom and are eternal. So Abraham went early in the morning to the place, verse 27, where he had stood before the Lord. And he looked toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land of the plain, and he saw, and behold, the smoke of the lamb which went up like the smoke of a furnace. You know, flashback to when Lot and Abraham were together in Canaan, and they had to part ways, and Abraham says, Lot, you choose first where you want to go. And Lot looked toward the well-watered plains of Sodom and Gomorrah. See, this is how we look at the world. Oh, it looks so good right now. But listen, guys, it's all going to burn. You know, Jesus spoke about the judgment that will come upon this world. And that should sober us up to realize we're close, particularly because we have a greater evidence now that these things will come to pass much, much more than they did back then. There was no warning at all for the Sodomites. No warning at all. Judgment came upon them suddenly. And the Bible says that the judgment will come like a thief in the night. They don't know what it costs them until they wake up in the morning. Oh my goodness, they lost everything. And that will happen to many, many people. But you're not children of the dark that this day should overtake you. For Lot, though he was carnal, he still had warning. And I believe that we have that warning around us. We who can at least in even in a nominal way read the Bible, we realize, wait a minute, Israel's back in the land as the Bible predicted would happen in the last days. They became a nation in 1948. Wow, that's not long ago. And all these nations that the Bible spoke about that will come and attack Israel, wow, they're all posturing. There's Russia right there. They're making their moves. And Iran and all of the other nations around, the break-off nations of the old former Soviet Union, all in position. Turkey's the only one on the edge right now. We're close, folks. Don't know how much more time we have. But I don't think it's a time to be messing around. I think we've got the angel's voice saying, get out of Sodom. Flee Sodom. Don't let this world wrap itself around your heart. Don't conform to the world or the things in the world that is passing away. And so he sees it going up in smoke, and it came to pass, verse 29, when God destroyed the cities of the plain, that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had dwelt. For all we know, Abraham's standing there in shock, thinking, wow, I guess there weren't 10 righteous. Too bad for Lot. He might not even know. God mercifully answered his prayer for Lot. Less than half a day since he interceded, now it's come to pass. In a moment, you know, business as usual. Hey, people were doing their work. They're getting ready for the morning. got their cup of coffee, ready to go to work. Everything's normal. And just like it was on the day the World Trade Center was attacked, 3,000 people that day had not any clue that they would breathe their last. They didn't know when they went to work that morning how it would all end. In a moment, everything's changed. And you know what? We don't know how vulnerable we are. Whether it's some nuclear, dirty nuclear device that's set off, whether it's some bomb or whatever that the Islamic terrorists have planned, we don't know. But you know what? Are you afraid? Are you afraid of the economic situation? Is this what's bothered you more than anything? If so, just maybe we need to look at ourselves. Are we just like Lot then? As far as Abraham's concerned, he kept himself separate. He's interceding. You see, you're either a part of the problem or you're part of the solution. Lot was a part of the problem. He's not influential to anybody in Sodom. He's not even influential to his family. And Abraham, with his prayer, because I believe that's the only reason Lot got out alive, is the prayer of Abraham. Do you realize what influence you can have through prayer? Do you realize what you can mean for someone else by praying for them? By interceding to God on their behalf? Praying that God would use you to reach out to others, use you to talk to others about their soul, use you to maybe invite people out to the crusade, take advantage of the opportunities. Hey, time is short. Time is short. The final chapter of Lot, though, doesn't get any better. You'd think after seeing that destruction, you would have a broken, repentant man. A man that will do anything to follow the Lord. A man that will honor the Lord and keep himself straight. Instead, you see a sordid picture of drunkenness and incest in this final part of the chapter, which is just shocking to me. Lot, it says, went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountains. He went to Zoar, but now he's in Zoar. I think he lost his taste for the city. You know, after seeing what happened. So he went up into the mountains after all. His two daughters were with him, for he was afraid to dwell in Zoar. And he and his two daughters dwelt in a cave. See, he can't even trust the Lord's word. The Lord said, okay, I won't overthrow Zoar for your sake. I'll go ahead and go there. He can't even trust God's word. You know, does it remind you of a number of Christians who just, you know, no matter what you tell them, they just can't rest in God's promises. And so he goes up in the mountains now. Well, the Lord told him to go in the mountains and then let him go to Zoar. Why are you going to the mountains now? So the firstborn said to the younger, our father is old and there's no man on the earth to come into us, as is the custom of all the earth. As far as they are concerned, everybody in the world died. He says, come, let us make our father drink wine and we'll lie with him that we may preserve the lineage of our father. So they made their father drink wine that night and the firstborn went in. Yeah, they made him drink wine. Yeah, they opened his mouth and they forced him. They made him guzzle the whole pint down, you know. Yeah, okay. He was really forced, I'm sure. And the firstborn went in and lay with their father. He didn't know when she lay down or when she arose. It happened on the next day that the firstborn said to the younger, indeed, I lay with my father last night. Let us make him drink wine tonight. And you go in and lie with him that we may preserve the lineage of our father. And they made their father drink wine that night also. And the younger went in and lay with him and didn't know when she lay down or when she arose. Thus both the daughters of Lot were with child by their father. And the firstborn bore a son and called his name Moab, which means from father. This is my child from my father. And, you know, he's the father of the Moabites to this day. And the younger, verse 38, she also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi, for he is the father of the people of Ammon to this day. You know, interesting, this word means essentially son of my people. So again, there's that little inclination that they both were children of their own father. And Lot's final shame, essentially, how low can you go? How low can you go? You know, the amazing thing about this, though, is that you don't know this until later. Because this is kind of like a tough message. I mean, it's pretty much a message of judgment and, you know, flee from Sodom. But, you know, there's an amazing mercy in this. Despite all of Lot's sin, you think it's pretty much washed up. Yes, Moab and the people of Ammon become some serious problems to Israel later on. There's consequences to your sin that you've got to eat it. But he says, always, always mercy. Can you think of a Moabite person who God actually raised up and she became one of the ancestors of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ? Can you think of a young woman who God used and she became the great-grandmother of David, the king, and she was a Moabite woman? Anybody coming to mind? Ruth. Ruth. Ruth is an amazing woman. You know, she was there, married one of these wayward young men from Israel who would end up dying. Now she's a widow. And she goes with her mother-in-law and back into the land of Israel and is just faithful to follow the God. You know the story. Wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you lodge, I'll lodge. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Ruth believed in the living God, even though Naomi herself was kind of a little backslidden. And when she went back into the land and they said, oh, Naomi's back, she says, don't call me Naomi. Call me Bitter. Call me Mara. For the Almighty has dealt bitterly with me. She lost her husband. She lost her two sons. Now she's back in the land with nothing, bereft of everything. And yet, you see, God intended mercy through this Moabite woman, Ruth, who went out in the field faithfully to serve. Boaz comes along, sees her being faithful and being very well-off man. You know, he honors her by marriage, and she becomes the mother of Obed and Obed Jesse. And Jesse, then David. An amazing picture, amazing story. I want to encourage you with this because you know what? You might be looking at your life and thinking, you know what? I've so screwed up my life. I've been so living in Sodom, I don't even know which way is up anymore. And I've messed up totally. I don't think anything good can come of this. I want to tell you something. Do you know that David, King David, would have never been born had it not been for Lot's sin here? Does that blow your mind? You see, this is wild how God can take our sin, our stupidity, and by His mercy, if we give it to Him, turn it over, and He can turn good out of it. That's why I want people to think, you know, there's so many times we apply human logic to it. A young woman gets in trouble, she gets pregnant, and her parents are saying, well, you got to abort that child. You can't be a teen mother. It'll ruin your life. Poor kid. I always hear that. Poor kid. Don't want to bring this child up in this. Who are you to play God? You don't know how God could use that child of sin, yes, but God is faithful. And I'll tell you what, I really believe that one day we're going to see how God pieces His plan together and we're going to blow our minds at the choices that we made back then that were sinful and wrong, and yet God faithfully maneuvers us in a place to bring out wonderful truths from it. Even something even as amazing as His own Son came from the lineage of this relationship. That's amazing. That is amazing. But we have to make a stand. Are we going to make that stand? I pray that if you haven't made up your mind already to flee Sodom, that you do so, because I think time is short. I don't think you have much time. I really believe we're close. You know, we're putting a Band-Aid on our financial crisis, but who knows what this is going to solve. I mean, yeah, the market's going to go up. I'm sure they're going to solve this for the next month or so. I'm sure everything's going to be fine, but we don't know. But what then? We're going to get giddy and in our wealth and make a lot of money and think it's all about this again? Or are we going to think about the eternal things? You know, time is short. I don't have time to mess around anymore. I don't know if you've sensed that change in the tone of the messages here. I really believe time is short. And I pray that you'll get right with the Lord, because He is merciful and gracious. It's not an accident that you're here to hear.